I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't do drugs.
I play video games.
With your hosts, John DeLuna, Brian Kilby,
X-Chicken,
Weebum,
damn right I am,
and Rob.
Here we go!
News and the Blue Mary.
Everybody, welcome to News and Wave for October 2012. With me, usual boys, Brian and Rob. Guys, this month we've got two good topics. One of them is about a month late, but who cares? And the second one, very, very topical. So first, we're going to talk about Mortal Monday, and then we're going to talk about the apparent fall of G4, the quote-unquote video games channel. So first of all, Mortal Monday was September 13th, 10 years ago, I believe. Is that right?
19 years ago,
1993. And yeah, we're old. So Mortal Monday, if you're not old and you don't remember, you weren't around or you were just a pup, was the day that Mortal Kombat came to home and handheld consoles. Four of them, actually, mainly Genesis, Super Nintendo, Game Boy, and Game Gear, all at the same time. Oh. And you
forgot
came,
about the Game Boy game, sorry.
Yeah, the Game Boy, where you could play Goro. How about that? But not Johnny Cage. You can talk about like your Halo 2 and 3 releases. You can talk about your Madden 10 or whatever, but there's never been anything like this ever. And I don't think there ever will be. You know? So, Brian, I know this topic was near and dear to your heart. So, let loose, buddy. What is Mortal Monday conjure up in that brain of yours?
I fondly remember getting the SNES version and the months and months of anticipation of the game coming out. Sans blood.
Sweat. It was sweat.
Yeah, it was sweat. Being disappointed. You know, actually, I don't think it's as big as some of the modern releases now. I just think it was one of the first, like, really big game releases. The first time they made a really huge flipping deal of, like, a single day. And they made big deals of, like, Mario 2, Mario 3, Zelda 2. But that was, you know, there were chip shortages and stuff that it kept those from being, like, huge launches. But Mortal on Monday was, like, it was, like, the first real... It like almost legitimized video games as a form of media, kind of like a movie release, and it was huge. The game wasn't that great on any of the platforms, but I still fondly remember spending way too much time playing the SNES game, trying as hard as I could to find out a way to like make it like really Mortal Kombat with blood and gore, and the Game Genie sweat code that changed it red really didn't do it for me.
I completely forgot about the Game Genie aspect of it. Yeah, that was back in the days when you could essentially break a game with Game Genie. And I actually forgot there was kind of a quasi-blood thing going on there. The SNES version did look better, obviously, markedly better.
Yeah, looked and sounded way better. Did not control as well.
Yeah. And that's... Go ahead, Rob.
It had that weird lag where you had to actually hold the button for a second to... get to move, and if you wanted to do any kind of special move, you had to make sure you pressed it fast enough that you did not move. That was really bizarre.
Yeah, one of the things that I guess people don't remember about the Super Nintendo version is the controls. It controlled way different than the arcade. There were certain things you couldn't do, like the combo system, if you could even call Mortal Kombat's engine having a combo system. It was different. The anti-airs were different. It was essentially a completely different game. The Genesis was much closer. I think the Sega CD version down the line was even more so. And of course,
it was basically the Genesis game with the Super Nintendo sound and full motion video. That was basically the difference.
Isn't that basically the difference for most Sega CD games? Really?
Yeah. Sadly, yes.
Yes. It's the CD quality sound. You know what? The other thing that you got to remember too about Mortal Monday is, and you kind of hit on this, is the prices. So games were unbelievably expensive. The Super Nintendo game was, I think, $70.
Yeah, it was $70.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, hearty har har, adjust for inflation. Obviously, it's even worse by today's standards. But and that was the most expensive. I think it was Super Nintendo, Genesis, and then the handhelds were kind of down the middle. But yeah, I mean, and even the Game Boy had the I guess, the selling point of you could play as Goro. Although, oddly, they did take out Johnny Cage, I guess, obviously because of memory shortage, but
yeah.
It was kind of a nice throw-in to be able to play Goro.
So, apparently, the SNES game at one point in development did have the gore and the blood, but I have never seen any screenshots or anything to corroborate that, you know, rumor or report. Have either of you ever saw, like, screenshots of the SNES game that actually included, like, guts and gore and stuff?
It has been so long that I cannot even remember. It's possible really early in development that there were some screenshots in the magazine, but it's been so long.
Yeah, I don't remember any kind of legitimate source, I guess, saying that. I mean, it's probably perfectly reasonable to think that very early in development they just went in and programmed ports, not knowing how handcuffed they were going to be, just to start porting, and then they had to shut it off at some point. But I've never seen, like, visual evidence of blood in the Super Nintendo game, or, like, you know, even anything like approaching the regular fatalities.
Scorpion's fatality was unchanged.
Right. Kind of surprising.
Is that the only
one? Well, let's see here. Yeah, Raiden's was changed. Sub-Zero's was changed. Sub-Zero's, where he froze you and, like, smashed you, actually became, like, legitimate fatalities down the line. Johnny Cage had the ridiculous kick to the sternum. I think, was Kung Lao's changed? They couldn't change Kung Lao's. It was not violent at all to begin with.
Didn't it knock your head off?
Oh, you mean Liu Kang?
Yeah, Liu Kang. Sorry, Liu Kang, yeah.
Didn't it, like, decapitate you or something? Or
no, he just did a cartwheel and uppercutted you.
Yeah, so, okay, yeah. Those two were unchanged then.
Yeah, and then Sonya, I forgot what they did with Sonya's. I can't remember how they changed hers. Because in the original, she blew you up with a kiss, but there's no way she did that in the Super Nintendo one, I don't think. But if they didn't change Scorpion's, her fatality is essentially the exact same thing as Scorpion's.
It probably was left untouched.
Yeah, yeah. So,
you know, a year later, the Mortal Kombat 2 came out and for the SNES, and then basically the whole argument was settled because it had the graphics, it had the sound, and it had the gore. So,
yeah,
screw you, Sega.
Yeah, Sega was sad. Once Nintendo said, hey, we like money more than, I guess, you know, morals and ethics and that kind of thing. And, you know, who cares? You're not going to win fighting against gore in video games. That's a battle you will not win. So I think they probably figured that out pretty quick. Okay, guys. So also in the last month, we've learned about apparently the fall of G4. So starting sometime next year, reports say that G4 is going to be reformatted and repurposed. Nobody knows exactly what kind of changes they're going to make to G4, but it certainly seems that video games are going to become very, very low priority for G4. It may become something more like just a generic men's channel, a GQ kind of channel. Needless to say, though, the G4 that we know and maybe love, maybe not, is going away. So I think all three of us have logged plenty of hours one way or another watching G4 or its predecessors or bits and pieces of it. And I think we all have opinions on G4 and how it's been handled, if it's been a success or a missed opportunity, yada, yada, yada. So let's talk about this. I mean, this is a channel that set out at some point to be a video game channel, and it's clearly not working, and it hasn't worked. There's lots of reasons why it hasn't worked. I think one of the big things that G4 has really failed to do is they failed to really understand, frankly, what video games mean to the players. So on an emotional level, they never seem to really get what a video game is to someone who's playing it. It was always, everything they've done has kind of been on the surface. It's been, I mean, comedy aside and you know, toilet humor aside and that kind of stuff. And, you know, the dirty jokes and the frat boy kind of humor and stuff aside, they've never really done anything that gets to the heart of why people play video games. You don't see, like the competitive nature of video games. So there's these huge tournaments that go on every weekend in all kinds of genres of video games. They don't really hit on that stuff. They do, I mean, they have their fun at Comic-Con. They do their jokes and you know, they have their cosplay laughs and things like that. And then they talk to developers about video games that they're trying to sell. But you never feel like there's this emotional connection like, say, even in the early days ESPN had with sports fans, where they understood, they got past the fact that, yes, video sports are popular, people spend a lot of money on sports, we can make a lot of money putting sports on TV. They understood why people loved sports, and they kind of played off that. And once they really got that, of course, ESPN became this monolith. It seems like G4 has never really done that, and now they frankly run out of time. So, guys, let's start with Rob. Rob, what are your thoughts on G4, and especially now that it seems like its days are numbered as a video game channel?
Well, to be honest, I've been expecting this for years. About the time, I guess it was 5 years ago now, when the people in charge of the network said that they were going to start moving away from games because it was just too narrow a focus for a network, my response at the time was, well, sure, the way you do it. It's not just that they don't quite get it. It's also this is pretty much how specialty cable networks tend to go. They tend to, they tend to have started out looking at a very narrow audience, a niche market. And then as they try to expand, they have to become more general to get a general audience. And in many cases, they just completely lose their identity. That is pretty much what happened with Spike TV, in my opinion, over the years, as it became Spike TV from the things it was before. I think the most telling thing I can say about G4 and the thing that I've been thinking about since I listened to you guys talking about it on RFC this past week is that I have talked to both Adam Sessler and Kevin Pereira on Twitter, and I like them both a lot more when they're not on G4.
Yep. Yeah.
Does that say? I mean, I don't know. I mean, does that just say that it speaks to kind of like this wasted talent, I guess, that the channel kind of has? It's not the talent per se. Maybe it's something bigger.
It's mismanagement.
The people in charge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I think some of the major problems that G4 has had, besides mismanagement, is that if people want video game related content, the kind of content that G4 used to cater to, there are shows like this, and there's YouTube. Mm-hmm. So my favorite stuff on G4 was the show that like showed the cinematic, or the ones that would like help you cheat your way through games. I would never turn my TV on nowadays to find that content, and wait for it. I would just go to YouTube and like search for it and have it in like 2 seconds. So basically G4 was a solution ahead of its time that is no longer needed. So like Robin mentioned, Spike TV. Spike TV used to be like narrowly focused on rednecks. And I'm not talking about people who are into wrestling and stuff like that. I mean, like literally it was the national network. And like growing up, that was what was on TV at my house all the time. I loved watching Dukes of Hazzard. My parents would watch the country music videos. And it was like narrowly focused on a certain subset of people. And it had to expand. So it expanded toward, men. Spike TV was about, it's like the men's channel. It was the Maxim of TV, sort of.
That's fair.
But yeah, then even now it had to become more, more generalized than that. G4 really, it really couldn't sustain itself. If it had gone, say, maybe the Tech TV route, because it bought out Tech TV. Tech TV was originally ZDTV, then Tech TV. It was a cable channel that basically catered to technology enthusiasts. It was a really good idea. There were help shows and just general, geekery shows that catered to, narrow-casted is a good way of putting it, narrow-casted to a small subset of people. And G4 bought them out because they wanted X-Play. X-Play at the time was the best gaming show on TV. They didn't have it, so they wanted it. And then they basically made their whole network around X-Play, which is a big failure. But if Tech TV were still around, it might actually have an audience. But G4 pretty much killed every single property on it except for X-Play, and they're suffering for it now.
So do you think that something like G4, do you think the way G4 is, I guess, constructed or anything that they could do with it is, it's kind of like, is the party over? Or do you think something like this, if they transition somehow to become like based on YouTube or based digitally somewhere as kind of like an online channel, an on demand kind of based channel, do you think that they could find new life that way? Or do you think like essentially the party's over because there are places like YouTube and Twitch and podcasts like this, and that's just where people go now?
Party's over doesn't scale. They have a whole network full of people, executives. I mean, if they had a studio, you know, about $1 million, 20 people tops working there, yeah, they could probably, you know, transition to the internet. But no, too big, too many people, too big of a payroll. Nah, it's not possible.
It's a shame. I wonder if, you know, I wonder if that becomes a brand, though, that somehow they do revive, like once it's burned to the ground, completely dead and over, they just take the name and they repurpose it somewhere digitally. It's been a rough year, though, for like video game brands. So if you want to say, if you want to lump G4 in with, say, like GamePro, I mean, there's a lot of death in the family this year. It's been kind of sad. We haven't really, I don't know if we really talked, we didn't talk too much about GamePro, but I mean, that's another one where it's gonzo. So, you know, it held out as a website. Guess what? The website's gone. I think I don't even know if the website is still what it turned into. And that was essentially a landing page for video game news.
Yeah, I don't know. Electronic Gaming Monthly went away, then it came back. Now it's, I think it came back at a 12 month, 12 issue a year premium magazine. Now that's sort of gone down to, I think, a 6 issue a year.
Like it may even be quarterly. Magazine.
Yeah, I still have a subscription. I honestly don't even look at it when I get it.
And you're not even sure how often you get it. So
I don't even know.
Wow. That's so the writing's on the wall there. That's extra sad. But I mean, the thing is, so let's talk about video game journalism for a second. So this brings up an interesting idea. Video game journalism can be very interesting. I've read fabulous articles on, say, like the history of Valve or the struggles of Duke Nukem's development, Duke Nukem Forever's development, things like that. I've read fantastic articles about the history of Nintendo, really good journalism, but on a day-to-day basis, or I guess more on a... when you're not looking at this big meaty like feature on something that isn't time sensitive, it's like this historical kind of piece, it's really hard to find good game journalism. That's obviously one place where G4 could have had some play. They could have done some stuff. There's no 60 minutes version of that show for G4. I mean, when you look at G4, they don't stand for essentially really any much of anything. So be it journalism or even Hucks and Yucks, they don't own anything. But the journalism is something that obviously they never really pursued. And good journalism is getting harder to find online for video games. You're kind of reduced to places like Kotaku and yeah. I guess Giant Bomb and a couple other places, but they can tend to be, I guess, less serious. They don't feel compelled to have a serious bent consistently. So I mean, I don't know if like, I don't know what to say about that. I feel like at this point, video games are too big of an industry. There's too many stories out there for there not to be this greater sense of quality journalism. It's just not there. It's never really seemed to materialize as its own. It's never really come into its own.
I think the internet killed it. It's the worst part about it. Like back in the day, I used to subscribe to like no less than 3 or 4 gaming magazines at a time, and at least 2 or 3 of them were really good. EGM up until like the late 90s, early 2000s was really good. Next Generation Magazine, which was this like adult like gaming journalist / gaming professional geared magazine, was just truly excellent. Even GamePro wasn't terrible for a period of time. Heck, I subscribed to Nintendo Power, EGM2, and I had the first I subscribed and I had the first several issues of of Game Informer back when it was just the newsletter of, what was it, Funko Land. I mean, I subscribed. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of stuff in the past that was great, and it's just I think it's all been diluted because there are so many gaming sites and they have bought each other, and a lot of the really best journalists have moved on to other projects doing their own stuff. Or moved into the gaming industry. I mean, I think that's really why people in the gaming journalists are out there. A lot of them really just want to be in the game industry. They want to make the games. So, mm-hmm. So between just everyone condensing down to IGN and UGO or whatever it is, and a couple other things, people joining the industry or people going off and doing their own thing, it's just there is too much content, not enough people centralized in one location to have like a really, really A-tier gaming website like GameSpot used to be, or IGN used to be, or God help me, 1UP used to be. I love 1UP. I'm a 1UP, you know, faithful, stalwart. I'm still a holdout, but it's really only a shell of the magazine it used to be. I think the headcount's now like less than 10 people. Like mm-hmm. between like Jeremy Parrish and like two other people, they like write every article on the site. So
Wow.
The other issue, that one of the reasons that almost all the articles you cited as to, you know, good pieces of journalism you wrote are in the past tense, or you've read are in the past tense, is that, you know, that there is a certain amount of, I think, tension in covering new releases. You know, the PR people are right there. The developers have to watch what they say. You know, you have to get that distance of time at this point because of the size of the industry and the money involved to get that good journalism, because otherwise, you know, there's just things people can't say if, you know, they want to keep their jobs.
Yeah, and it's not like oh, and I hate to say this, but I'm going to say it. It's not like gaming journalism is like real news. No one is going to blow up because, the next Halo game gets a C at 1UP. You know, it's not like, you know, countries rise and fall on this industry. So it's really a big PR machine. And, you know, like you said, people are afraid. Was it Jeff Gerstmann at GameSpot was, you know, terminated because of a review of Kanan Lynch or whatever it was. I don't remember. And, you know, it's a mess. People who really could say something and could really add to the conversation are either, you know, afraid, doing something else, or, you know, out there publishing like their own quarterly, you know, gaming magazine through that HP cloud printing website. So,
and honestly, one of the other problems, it is a problem that affects normal journalism too, which is that you have to get the views you need to get the eyes on you. You have to have access to the people you want to talk to the people want to read about.
Yes.
and they know it. And if you say something they don't want, you may not have that access next time.
Yep.
I mean, this is a problem affecting journalism in a widespread way, but particularly in gaming, it is a big problem.
Yeah,
absolutely. I agree. Good points all. And you know, it's sad. The thing is, too, I guess what's sad is, yes, it's a PR machine. Yes, it's more analogous to, say, entertainment reporting, kind of, you know, E.T. Entertainment
yes.
Tonight kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, yes, we are talking about pure entertainment, and it has a fluff factor and all that stuff. The shame of it is that at the end of the day, at least when it comes to new releases, is that video games are really expensive, and for a lot of consumers, it's a heavy investment. And so, you know, sometimes lack of journalism can hurt, because at the end of the day, the consumer's throwing down a lot of money to invest in something that may not have quite the coverage that it used to. Or, you know, when a new game comes out, frankly, a negative word, a discouraging word, may be harder to find than it used to be, maybe at least in the earlier days of the internet. Everyone has an embargo to deal with. Everyone has a boss to answer to. Even little things like, here's an example, like Skyrim. So Skyrim on the PlayStation 3 has become a fiasco. There's been a giant walkout of users because it's been pretty clear through bits and pieces of evidence that Bethesda knew that Skyrim wasn't going to work so well on the PS3. The PS3 didn't have the right RAM. The PS3 just didn't run the game sufficiently. They knew that going in. And so they released a product that frankly didn't work very well with a straight face. when all this evidence has kind of come to light, all these frustrated PS3 users, players, have kind of staged a Skyrim walkout. So they've all walked out. They're not playing the game anymore. They're not supporting the game anymore in protest. That's good for them. And that's and Bethesda should own up to that. It's a shame that we don't have, like you said, Brian, kind of centralized news house, you know, be it, you know, like a Wall Street Journal or something, kind of like some place where we look to for at least a, the more serious side, even like Variety Magazine in Hollywood, some place where we can look to for like a more serious kind of dissection of the news of the day in video games. Because right now it's just all dispersed. And I guess the biggest thing is the one thing that I really hate are, frankly, sites like Kotaku, which are just kind of like one snarky post after another. One in 10 posts have substance. It's kind of like, it's all cotton candy with one or two maybe serious posts a month kind of thrown in. That can get kind of frustrating because then you feel like, you know, who's covering this industry? Who's really, you know, watching my back or feeding me some interesting pieces of information? You have to search for that a little bit harder than I feel you should. So actually real quick. So Rob, we know that Brian is a connoisseur of old magazines. Did you have any favorite reads back in the day when video game mags were kind of abundant?
Oh, definitely EGM. I have somewhere next to me, in fact, an entire crate full of all of EGM that I ever got. I also have Nintendo Power there too. That was a favorite, not particularly for, you know, hard hitting journalism or anything remotely like it, but they had some of the nicest layouts and some of the nicest art of the magazines of the day. And on that level, I always really enjoyed Nintendo Power. But in terms of actual news, EGM was my favorite and I stuck with it for a good long time.
At its height, EGM was incredible. When EGM was like at its peak, every month you would get, it felt like an encyclopedia. The books were so big.
Oh my God.
Thick with information. It was amazing.
Yeah. Around 94, December, I think, the one that had the X-Men on the cover was over 400 pages.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
That's insane. Think about like the shipping alone just to get those books to people back in the day. And I mean, you're right. Like back then, I mean, that was great. That was great reading. You would read that you'd read that two or three times. And by the time you were done, the next month's issue would be
Mm-hmm.
It was great.
So Rob had mentioned that all of his issues of EGM are in a box. All of mine are on my hard drive.
Nice.
Thanks to a couple various websites where these things are stored that I might have kicked some cash to at one point to sort of help support the effort. Most of those gaming magazines are available on the internet if you know where to look.
Good.
So they've all been scanned one way or another, huh?
Yeah. In fact, I actually will buy a couple of magazines that are basically, really, it could just be a blog post, but there are people that put together using the HP Cloud service, and I think it's – I can't remember the name of it. They're basically creating magazines about – or content about these classic games but in magazine form. It's kind of cool. It's a neat hobby. It's kind of like what we do but using text instead of words and video. I really try to support any one of these that I come across that I like. I think it's a classicvgm.com or it used to be. I think if you Google classic VGM, that's one of them.
Hmm.
It's nice to know fanzines still exist in this day and age.
Yes, yes. You might have to go to Classic Video Game Magazine on Facebook. I think their website's gone, sadly. But there are a lot of zines out there.
That's good to know. And we would be remiss if we didn't mention that, you know, another casualty this year is Nintendo Power. So at the end of December,
it's been dead for years.
Well, yes, but now they're going to bury the body. So at the end of December, they're going to stop publishing it. And even reports say that it was essentially Nintendo's decision to kill it and also not support any kind of like digital version or initiatives to kind of keep
it going. They killed it years ago. I think it's a Future Publishing that does it now.
Yes.
I mean, Nintendo hasn't actually published that or had anything really to do with it in years.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a licensed product for a while.
It's dead. It's dead.
So sad. So sad. So sad. I'm trying to think if there's anything. I guess EGM, the quarterly EGM, at this point, or the semi-annual EGM is the last of the dinosaurs. I guess that sounds right. I guess if you ask me, like, if I had to bet between Nintendo Power, EGM, and GamePro, which one would survive the longest, it would be Nintendo Power. But I guess that's not going to be the case.
I would have thought EGM at the time myself, just because, you know, like I said, as much as I like Nintendo Power, it always felt like EGM had more substance to it. So I would have put money, you know, back at the time we're pretty much all thinking of on them being the longest holdout. If I had even, you know, given thought to the idea of magazines ceasing to exist in general.
Yeah, if you have a Kindle or a Kindle app, break out the $3.33 a month it costs to get Edge Magazine. That's totally worth it. That's
Edge Magazine,
UK.
Huh? Okay.
Yeah, it's out of the
cool.
UK.
Cool. Very
it's
nice.
Probably the best gaming magazine going today.
Noted.
Is Retro Gamer still going? Do you happen to know?
Considering, I don't think Retro Gamer actually ever had a digital version. Okay. But it's retrogamer.co.uk, I think, is the URL. I always wanted a subscription to that, but the magazine's like $10 or $15 to get a copy of it.
Yeah, I grabbed a couple at the local bookstore. It was kind of hard to find, but I always liked that.
Yeah, retrogamer.com is apparently. I thought that was a co.uk. It's still around, and...
Good.
No, this is something else. Maybe it's not.
That would be a
maybe.
Shame.
Yeah, that would be a shame.
Well, there's retrogamer.net. Is that the same? It's definitely European. Let's see.
That would be right.
Subscribe and save lots of pounds.
That's it. Yeah, .com is the .com is like some gaming thing. Yeah, yeah, it's still available. I would like you to get a subscription, but it's not digital. You can get it digital, though. Actually, it's on iTunes, but I don't have any iOS devices, so that's why I can't get it.
Well,
I wouldn't mind the hard copy, but I bet the cost is prohibitive.
Yeah, I would totally get that. That's something I would subscribe to.
Yeah,
nearly totally. Always came with a demo disc with, or a disc with legal emulation on it, which was nice.
That's
Ooh.
Cool.
Ooh, that is cool. Retro Gamer. All right, well, maybe this will be on the Christmas list. Good show, guys. Good show. This was awesome. So, yeah, Mortal Monday and, unfortunately, the death of G4. Meaty topics. One good, one sad. Not so bad. But so this will do it for the October issue of New Sound Wave. We'll see you guys next time for the November issue. We'll talk about whatever we decide, I guess, whatever's on our minds. But let's also talk a little bit about the Wii U, which is coming up. Pre-orders for the Wii U sold out, and I saw Rob tweeted about that. So we'll talk about what that means. And then we'll also see, you know, what the first next-gen console is bringing to the table this holiday season. So until then, for John, that's me, for Rob and Brian, we'll see you next time.
2-1-0. Game over.
I can't quit now, Luigi. I was born with a plunger in my hand.
I know. Boy, was awfully hard on Mom.
This has been New Sound Wave. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Check out all our videos at tfvideo.net. New Sound Wave is a Radio Free Cybertron production.